Thank you. Good afternoon. All right. That's great. Welcome, everybody. Let me just start my timer. To Web 2.0 strategies that work for immunization education and outreach programs. My name is Shay Van Horn, and I work at the Academy for Educational Development in Washington, D.C. And this is my first time to Dallas. It's very exciting. It's my second time to Texas. I work for the Center for Health Communication. I'm a senior marketing and communication specialist there. And the work that I primarily am a part of is web-based and e-marketing strategies for different health promotion campaigns, primarily with NIH and CDC. Most of my work is in childhood obesity prevention and other obesity awareness campaigns, as well as an HIV vaccine clinical trial campaign for NIAID. And I'm very excited to be a part of this conversation with you guys today, and I was thinking Web 2.0, we should have like everyone with laptops and you could be entering information and I could be getting an RSS feed up here of your thoughts, but not quite so technologically advanced. So we'll keep it a little more 1.0, but we'll talk about stuff that's 2.0 today. Today we'll talk a little bit about, you know, what is Web 2.0, some background of the internet, how it's evolved over time, what's new about it now, what it means for you, the work that you do, and then talk about, you know, how valuable is it to you and how can you determine if it's working for you. Throughout the conversation, I'll talk about some examples with each of the various elements, and then hopefully maybe there can be some time at the end for some discussion about the work that you're doing for those that may already be doing some Web 2.0 activities in your efforts. A lot of the work that I do is from a distance, thinking of ideas, but the community is where I think a lot of this really has its deep impact. And I'll share some resources and certainly take time for questions. By the end of today, you should be able to identify your key audiences and goals, get to know them a little bit better, develop and or use blogs, RSS, wiki, podcasts, etc., other things we'll talk about today. Understand how to establish and maintain a presence on social networking websites. Use online forums to reach stakeholders and partners. And promote messages to key constituencies and audience segments through interactive content, social networks, and viral marketing. So let's start with just the internet. So here is a nice image of people looking at screens. And you know, the internet's been around for a while, and a lot of people are using it. I just wanted to have some statistics for you guys today. According to the Pew Internet and Family Research Center, as of the end of December 2008, 74% of American adults use the internet. And that's approximately 220 million people over the age of 19 using the internet every day. So, show of hands, who doesn't use the internet? I figured it would be easier to sort of get a visual other than everyone raising their hand. It's pretty commonplace nowadays to obviously be using the internet. These are the top 10 things that people do on the internet. And there are lots of other things. These, as you look at this list, it's pretty straightforward. You know, sending and reading email, looking for something online, going to Google or Yahoo, finding some information about a hobby or your next trip to Greece or wherever you're traveling next. What the weather is. I looked at the weather in Dallas when I left D.C. this morning to know what should I be packing. Buying a product, getting the news. A lot of these things are fairly, I would call, traditional activities. They've been around for a long time, and they don't really require a lot of interactivity. But there's certainly important things for us to be doing. Just a few slides. I don't want to be too dry, but I think it's with communication campaigns, it's always critical to know our audience and what they're doing and be aware of what their needs are. And you can see that when it comes to gender, internet usage is pretty much the same for men and women. About 3/4 of individuals are using the internet. When you look at age, and this I think is an interesting discussion because often people think the internet is something for younger people, and certainly use of internet decreases as we get older, or as we look at ages, but you know, almost all 18 to 29 year olds are using the internet. It's not much difference to when you get to the next age group of 30 to 49, and it's 3/4 of us that are 50 to 64, and though this number is lower than all of these, That number is on the increase, and more individuals who are over 65 are using the internet for a variety of reasons. Oops. Not a lot of difference. This study looked at three races and ethnicities. When you look at geography, again, it's interesting that, you know, no matter where you live, it's pretty much the same between urban, suburban, and rural. And I noticed some couple things I thought were interesting here. 62% of employed adults use the internet or email at their job and have cell phones or Blackberries that keep them connected when they're not at work. So we're at a time now where most of us are using the internet at work, and when we're not at work, we have one of these next to us checking, you know, probably feverishly during breaks, you know, what's happening, and we're kind of getting very glued to these. And one thing that I think is also interesting as we look at Web 2.0 activity, the rate of broadband access is increasing. So it's about 47% 2 years ago, up to about 55% now. So that has an impact on the types of functions and the types of features that we can be providing in the web. However, the flip side of that is that it's really only about half. So remember that as you're designing programs or using the internet, lots of people have dial-up connections still. And we want to be thinking about who your users are specifically with the types of activities you're going to be doing. It's pretty easy trend to see that as income goes up and as education goes up, usage of the internet also goes up. So also be aware of all of the diversity of your audiences, and we want to make sure we're not making assumptions about what people want to be doing. Sometimes sitting around the table with a few coworkers, it feels like, oh, let's add Twitter. But if that's not for your audience, maybe there's another avenue that might be better. So technology is everywhere. So here's an image they found today using the internet. Found an image of some folks using cell phones in the subway in New York City. Now, whether you live in New York City, or if you live in Dallas, or if you live in Spokane, Washington, technology really is everywhere. And we're using it for a lot of different reasons. MP3 players, iPods, laptops, cell phones, cameras, everything. And the connectivity of those is really getting closer and closer. One thing that's changing, if you remember Time Person of the Year a couple years back, was you. So the internet used to be a lot about, in what might be called Web 1.0, providing information, static HTML pages, experts providing you with the knowledge that they have. One thing that's really starting to shift, and has been shifting for a while now, is that not one person is always the expert, but actually everyone knows a little bit about something, and that collective intelligence, and that giving that valuable function to content development to you and to us, to all of us, is quite powerful. So let's talk about what Web 2.0 is. By definition, just a term that refers to a new era of web-enabled applications that are built around user-generated or user-manipulated content. Things like all this list here. So let's just get to know each other a little bit. Raise your hand if you read blogs. And now raise your hand if you have commented on blogs. And how about hands if you write a blog, author a blog? So a couple hands, great. That's fantastic. Last time I spoke about this, fewer hands. It's great to see that that's going up. Social networking websites, things like Facebook, MySpace, Friendster. How many of you have a profile on one of those types of websites? Lots of hands. And how many of you have profiles on two or more? Fewer, but still some hands. Okay. Video sharing, YouTube. How many of you have downloaded or watched a video on YouTube or some other? Okay. We've got some nice trends going on here. And how many of you have uploaded your own video to YouTube? And was that for, hands up if that was for like a work professional campaign? Mm-hmm. Fantastic. How many of you have gone to a wiki, like Wikipedia is a pretty common wiki, for information? And have any of you edited content on a wiki? A couple hands. Do any of you regularly listen to, subscribe to podcasts? Have any of you made a podcast and published it, syndicated it? There's a new territory for us. RSS. If you raise your hand for podcasts, you've already received RSS because that's just a one way of getting an RSS feed. Do you have any RSS feeds? You get news every day? Great. And how many of you use things like Google Docs, web-based applications that allow you to sort of manipulate content in a central place that's not tied to where you are geographically? Fantastic. Okay, so in this room, you can already see a lot of diversity in the types of things that people are doing. Let's just look at a chart here, the same study from the Pew Internet and American Life Project. I think this almost matches exactly what was going on in the room. 57% of adults that go online have gone online to look at videos. And about a third have gone online to check out Wikipedia specifically. And about a third of them have social networking website profiles. And you can see it goes down, blogs, podcasts, Twitter. I forgot to ask, how many of you have a Twitter account? And great. So that's a little bit newer phenomenon, so I think the 11%, you know, probably reflects that. That data for the 11% comes from 2009. The rest is 2007 and forward. All right, let's dig in a little bit deeper to Web 2.0. So we've talked about this is a second generation of web-based services, sort of the evolution of what the internet was initially to what it can be now, without turning its back on what it has been and what it still can be. The term came into popularity sort of after the dot-com crash. It really focuses on facilitating creativity, collaboration, linking, and sharing among users. Nothing is fixed anymore. Nothing is only on this site anymore. A video that's on YouTube can be on your blog, which can be linked to on her blog, which can be downloaded and sent in an email to your colleagues. So it's really fluid. And each time someone touches it, it can become a little different. So this is the inclusion of user-generated content, really creating a collective intelligence. So we're here today asking ourselves, how do I do this? How do I get on board? And I would also add the question, it's hard to see up there, is this the right train? Often, and I think, you know, when the internet first came around, you know, there was this sort of jump on, everyone has the internet, send everything out on the internet, have a website. And certainly times have caught up to that, but it isn't always quite so immediate. So really, I would just sort of want to put over the thoughts that we have today. Stay in touch with who your audience is, who your constituents are, and keep that in mind as you creatively think about what you want to be doing for your campaigns and initiatives. So first of all, always with any campaign, with any activity, who is your audience? And I just put down some ideas of who I don't work with immunization groups or coalitions specifically, but these are some of the things that I thought might be applicable to that type of work. And also, what do you want to do? What do you want to achieve through these strategies? Maybe you want to increase the visibility of your coalition to a variety of audiences and stakeholders if you are a member of a coalition. Maybe you want to improve knowledge and attitudes towards a health issue, vaccinations, or other things that might be important to you. Enhance partnerships with the community, the families that matter, health professionals, donors. And certainly, everyone has their own goals that they're trying to achieve with their efforts. So, who's your audience and what are your goals? Pretty basic questions, but really important to keep in mind. I also want to keep in mind that websites, sort of a nice old-fashioned website, isn't something of the past. It's something that is often the main point of contact with the public. It's often the main call to action for many activities that we do in the health promotion arena. And it's a starting point for many, but not for all. Certainly, some people don't go there, they want to go to YouTube or other things that are a bit more out there, and we want to keep that in mind too. Websites can be relatively simple to develop and maintain. You could even use a blog as a website. Start it up on Blogger or WordPress, and there you go, you've got a website. Typically, that's free, or a small amount for hosting. And then you can always measure usage and statistics, and we'll get back to measuring and evaluating, which is always important in our work. So as you think about the functionality you have on your website, you always want to be providing the basics, who you are, what you do, what services you have. But as you start to think about what you can do differently with your website, so you have a website and maybe you want to start to add a little bit of user-generated content or content that users can manipulate. Maybe there's a way to, for those that raise your hands, about sort of collaborative materials development. If you work on an issue that is important to people all across the country or in a region, Maybe there are ways to let everyone come together without having to come together physically and create materials, create documents, create resources, and then make those available through your website. There you go, Web 2.0, easy, collaborative development together. Having interactive events and calendars, ways for people in different places to upload their information about what they're doing in their communities that make a difference to your community as well. Surveys, videos, podcasts, forums, RSS feeds, all of these things can be added to your website in addition to all the things we're about to talk about. And remember, it's also important to promote your website. And the tactics we'll talk about today are ways to promote your website if you have one. But there are other ways that are also still effective. E-newsletters, keyword search campaigns, though we often, I think, all have banner ad blindness, banner ads can still be effective for some, and there are affordable ways to place banner ads. Often on social networking websites, it can be a lot cheaper than things like bigger, like New York Times, etc. Online directories and search engines, where you can register your website to make sure people are finding it. We'll also talk a little bit today about search engine optimization and how it applies to all of your activities, and external links. Those are easy ways to make sure that your website is out there. Let's talk about blogs. So some of you raised your hands today, said that you go to blogs, comment on blogs, even have your own blog. Just for those who may not be as aware, we don't want to make any assumptions, blog comes from web log, hence blog. It's a website maintained by an individual or group. Regular entries of commentary, description of events, stories, graphics, video, etc. And these are posted in the order that they're received. So as you go to a blog, they're there in reverse chronological order. Usually it's a lively discussion, depending on the topic. There are blogs certainly on any topic, entertainment, politics, vaccinations, and each of them is going to have it's typically going to have its own bent on what its agenda is, what it's trying to communicate. And often, those that are further to an edge will have commentaries that are maybe on the opposite edge. And that leads down a path often we have to ask ourselves in the work that we do and who we work for, how open and how transparent can our commentary be? A lot of the work that I do is for government contracts. So there's a bit of sensitivity about, can we just have open commentary. Anyone can say anything about the content that we have. And it's not always the case that we can do that. Sometimes that mindset is a little diametrically opposed to what a blog is supposed to be like. So you want to really be aware of how you present your blog, how you frame it, so that as readers and people come to your blog, they don't take offense if it's not quite as open of a discussion as they may be used to in other blogs. All of that can be presented in a way through the tone of voice, the way you present things, and make sure that its expectations are being met. Blogs almost always link to other blogs, other content, other websites. This is basically a way to let others not do your work, but help you do your work. If, for example, if the CDC has done a phenomenal job of creating a PSA that is for African Americans about HIV prevention, and that's your target audience as well, and if you don't have the funds to do that, well, put that PSA on your blog, talk about it, get it out to your constituents, and you've saved resources, and you've also brought attention to something that's probably going to be, certainly with CDC, is going to be credible, accurate, timely. Authors encourage feedback and reader comments. This is just a screenshot of an Immunization Coalition's blog developed for the IZTA. Pretty straightforward, things you'll often see in blogs. Body of a story, when was, dates are critical. And also you want to make sure that if you're going to have a blog, you probably want to be updating it on a regular basis. This is something that requires attention on a pretty regular basis, whereas a website, you can have content that goes up, and if you're not highlighting the date, it may or not seem out of date, but a blog needs to look up to date. Like, people are blogging and posting every hour. So this is something you need to ask yourself, do you have the resources to do that? If it sits idle, it's not quite as dynamic as it should be or could be. Over here, comments, archive, people can come, and it's pretty straightforward. When a user comes to a blog, they know what to expect, and you want to present your blog probably in a similar way. Same type of logic we applied to websites when we designed them. They want to be usable based on Think about it. People spend more time on other people's websites than your website, on other people's blogs than your blog. So when they come to yours, they want to be familiar with it immediately. So what are the benefits of blogs? Well, we talked a little bit already about the fact that they're easy to create and they're free, often. They promote a two-way discussion, which can be very unique and very useful for certain topics. You can monitor, manage, and review the commentary. They're measurable and they're searchable. You can use sites like I have listed down below, TechNerdy. You can search blogs, just blogs, and find out what's out there in the blogosphere. I don't want to sort of go back to it, but remember also, a drawback of a blog, again, is the importance of timeliness. So think about that as you go down the path of a blog. How do you engage in the blogosphere? You don't have to have your own blog. Remember, or be aware, there are over 175,000 new blogs every day. That's a lot. So people are out there blogging about a lot of things. And even if you don't create your own blog, people are maybe blogging about topics that matter to you. So finding a way to engage doesn't always mean making your own blog, but putting your messages and your thoughts and comments into places that are appropriate. I can think of a lot of health topics where misinformation, people go online to get health information and they're going onto blogs. And if there's misinformation on blogs and it perpetuates and gets out of control, then our job as health communicators is harder. So we want to be aware of the fact that this is happening, this arena is there, and I don't mean to make it sound scary and spooky. There's a lot of benefit to it as well. But you can add to the blogosphere by offering interviews to bloggers with your spokespeople. Most likely, at this point in sort of the evolution of blogs, within each category, entertainment, music, health, physical activity, as you go, the list goes on, you know, 5 or 10 blogs probably rise to the top as the most popular blogs. Offer information to those bloggers to get your content and your ideas and your information and your efforts out there. You can also just do it by commenting on blogs. It doesn't have to be quite as formal as offering an interview. And you can also place banner ads on blogs. As I mentioned before, typically it's a lot more affordable than a lot of websites. Let's shift gears to social networking websites. And these are just some logos from some that are quite popular. It's interesting also, I think, the evolution. If you sort of have had profiles on these sites, you know, Friendster was a while ago, then MySpace, and now Facebook is kind of coming to the forefront. MySpace still has more registered users and active users than Facebook, though Facebook is much more out there right now. I think MySpace is about 110 million. Facebook is up to around 60 or 70 million. Friendster, I think, still has 40 to 60 million. And then LinkedIn, Plaxo, a little more professional, blackplanet.com. The list goes on. There's one called Ning, N-I-N-G.com, which is another one that's sort of coming onto the scene. If I had anything I wanted to add to this. I mean, if most of you raise your hand, or more than half, about half raise your hand when I asked who has a profile. And if you think back, why did you join? Why did you create a profile? Often the answer might be to just sort of, you know, connect with old friends. I can't tell you how many people I'm now friends with on Facebook that I haven't seen in 20 years since I graduated high school. And it's amazing how people just sort of, the more you connect, the more people just start to come out. So the definition of social networking is exactly what's going on. In addition to the immediate people that you know of that might be out there, there are people obviously out there that have concerns and interests and cares like you or like your efforts. So as you go onto these websites, you can start to get a sense of the groups and the activities that are out there and tap into immense power to coalesce around an issue or an activity and then coordinate events specifically for those people. It's pretty phenomenal. And we talked a little bit about how we think of it sometimes for the youth, but adults are on social networking websites. Adult users with profiles have quadrupled. This is adult internet users. The percentage has quadrupled of those that have profiles from 8% to 35%. 65% of teens have profiles. But the focus on youth and teens is a little bit misleading because adults make up a larger portion of the U.S. population. So there's actually more adults than teens on these sites, though the percentage of teens is greater. It still skews young, though. When you look at the adults, 75% of adults 18 to 24 report having a profile, whereas only 7% of 65 and older. So it's still a trend and still a movement of sort of younger people, but not at all to be left as a tactic you don't want to take if your communities are older adults. This is a screenshot of a MySpace profile that I developed with a team for one of our clients, the National Heart, Lung, Blood Institute, for a program called We Can. And one of the great things about this is most of you probably have a website or some content, some material that can be repurposed. And that's all we did with this. So this is MySpace. This is a video that we had that was on YouTube that we just embedded here. All of this content is content from our website or our brochures or our materials to describe who we are. This is just a banner ad that we had. These pages are, MySpace is a little more flexible in its creative design that you can do, that you can implement. Facebook's a little more rigid in what can be done. So this is just an example of a MySpace page. Here's a profile, not me, someone, it's a screenshot I found online on Google today, just to sort of show you sort of, you know, if you haven't been on Facebook, the new Facebook looks a little different than this. It really puts a lot more focus on this feed, mini feed, RSS feed of your people in your network. This is an activity that we did, and this is, I think, something I wanted to share with you today about how you can use social networks to really do the work for you. So if you don't have a MySpace page or a Facebook page or a group on any of these things, on any of these sites, but you know that people are out there. We found someone who had like-minded interests, childhood obesity prevention, thousands of friends. We reached out to that individual and said, we care about the same things. Would you help us by sharing our message with your network? And she was more than willing to do it. And then immediately, for we went from, you know, one day to the next day, 1,000 people had possibly seen our information. So you can really put those groups to work for you. This is just some statistics that show you the reach of social networking sites. It was designed more to talk about placing ads, but you can see the different audiences that you can reach through these sites. So let's shift a little bit now to video sharing sites. You've probably all been to YouTube. There's also Google Video, Vimeo, Blip TV. These are all sites that allow users to upload information, video content. These are highly used. Every minute, 15 hours of video is uploaded to YouTube. When you think about that stat next to the blogger, it's like you start to feel like, oh my gosh, there is so much out there. How do we find a niche? That's the tricky part. I mean, there is a lot of content out there. One of the things, jumping down to the last bullet here, one of the things that you can do to be helpful to people that are looking for your information is as you upload content, whether it's a video or a photo or some text, if it's tagged, and when I say tagged, I mean typically when you put a video up, you can say, what tags, what words do you want to associate with this content? So you might add a video, and it might have to do with, we made a vignette for the flu that showed, had some parents who had lost their children to the flu that hadn't been vaccinated. And if we post that, we might put some keywords like flu, vaccination, children, families. But you might also start to think about the words that others might search for. And if that, if those words are associated with your video, then they might find your video. Even though there are 15 hours of video uploaded every day, if you're helping users find your content, if you're going to create the content, help users find it. The other great thing about this, these types of things, is that you can get feedback right away. You can learn and you can track. You can see how many people, this is just a video screenshot I found again, you can see down here that 46,000 people have viewed this, that on average, people rated it 4 stars. other related videos, and if you were to scroll down the page, you'd see comments, people giving you direct feedback, immediate feedback about your content. So it's really great to be able to put something up and immediately know what people think about it. Same type of thing applies to photo sharing. Flickr, Picasa, any of you use either of those? Again, you can get feedback, you can tag the photos, and an example I read about recently is the Library of Congress. How many of you have been to the Library of Congress? I live in DC and I've never been there. You've been there, that's great. They're recognizing also that not everyone can get there, but they can use Flickr to upload their vast photos. And the same thing applies to any other organization that has a lot of content. Get it up and out on ways that people can share it. And if it's also modular, people can take bits of it and put it into their own channels. This is just a screenshot from Flickr. You can see here again someone's photo. Down here they have tags. You can't see it, but they had like green, boat, blue comments. And it's just a way to sort of, you know, put that information out there. Okay, Twitter. Again, who's Twitters? Okay, so Twittering is based on short message service, text messaging, SMS, which is limited to 140 characters. So that's what Twittering is based on. It allows you to type in 140 characters, telling anyone what you're doing. So right now, I could Twitter and say, I am giving a presentation on Web 2.0 in Dallas, Texas at the Sheraton. If that's 140 characters or less, I'm not sure, but something like that could go up. And it would allow anyone that has asked to follow me on Twitter. A great usage of this recently was when CDC used Twitter and Facebook to get the word out about the peanut butter recall. Immediately, people were aware of it. I could also tell you maybe a funny anecdote or maybe somewhat embarrassing anecdote. Yesterday, does anyone know who Lady Gaga is? Okay, so she's this pop singer that's kind of big right now. I think she's performing on American Idol, not that I'm a huge fan. But a lot of my friends were going to see her tomorrow night in Washington, D.C. She canceled her concert. I was at work, and something popped up and said, Lady Gaga canceled. And then I sort of, well, that's intriguing. I've got tickets. What's going on? I went to the venue where she was performing to see if anything was listed there. Nothing. Went to her website. Nothing. But I went back to my Twitter feed and my Facebook feed, and it's everywhere. Everyone knew that the concert was canceled, and people were in an uproar. I know that there are more important things in life than Lady Gaga canceling a concert, but people were in an uproar. Then all of a sudden, my Google Gmail chat, all these are popping up. Did you hear? Did you hear? Did you hear? So within 15 minutes, probably the entire audience knew, but no one else knew. So it's pretty amazing, again, the power of what this type of information can do. And I want to go back and say, I think the peanut butter recall is a little more important than Lady Gaga, but I just thought I would offer that personal story. This is a screenshot of what Twitter looks like. You can just, you know, this is where you would type in your 140 characters. It scrolls down, it counts down, letting you know how many you have. This is who you're following. People, this is not mine. These are all the people that are following this person. And as you, all of these sites start to work together, you'll get a sense of, you know, you'll receive different requests. Can I follow you on Twitter? Can I be your friend on Facebook, et cetera, et cetera. So just to sort of stop there with the social networking and the Twittering, you know, I've talked a lot about it from sort of a personal perspective and also from sort of, you know, a couple examples of campaigns, but this is really where I think there's a lot of power to the work that you're doing in communities to get the word out. Again, if the communities that you're reaching are on here, so really keep that in mind. You can't just put it up there and try to create a campaign around something if the constituencies that you want to reach aren't going to hear you. So wikis, Wikipedia certainly is, you know, I think the most well-known wiki, but it can be much more small scale. This can just be something that you can do with your team. This is something we could do right now where we could each contribute what we all know about Web 2.0. I could say all of this information, and then you could help me populate it with specific anecdotes and stories and experiences of what you've done with each of it. And by the end of that process, we'd have this living document that we've all collected together. So it's quite, again, powerful. with the idea that one person doesn't know everything, but everyone knows a little bit of something. This bottom-up knowledge base, very grassroots. The thing I think that's important to underscore, though, is credibility and accuracy. It's one thing if we're collectively sort of on the same page and we're focusing on a, you know, sort of a singular issue. But if you have Wikipedia and you're talking about Sigmund Freud, and then you're talking about microphones, and then you're talking about speakers, and then mirrors, everyone's going to have a little bit of different information. And so you need to be aware of the fact that I could, you know, there have been lots of sabotaging in Wikipedia information as well. There are better practices and best practices of citations and things like that. So just be aware of the content. User-generated content is phenomenal, but it's also user-generated content. This is a screenshot of the editing sort of features and functionality. So you can see that as you're working, you can type in the information. It'd be over here. You have to have an account. So there's a little bit of process. It's not just as easy as sort of going on and sort of adding your information. There's some effort to be done. But if you have a health issue or a topic that means something to you and your message is not included in the discussion, and if people are going here almost as often as they're going to Google to find out what something is, probably after Google, you go to Wikipedia to look something up. And if you're not a part of it, then you may be left out. Also, you may not have the opportunity to correct other individuals' mistakes or errors or misinformation, which is so important when it comes to health topics, I think. So RSS, really simple syndication. You've probably seen this icon on a lot of things now. Websites that have this allow you to pull from their site into your aggregator. So it's a web feed or channel that is published regularly. So things like blogs, as we talked about earlier, want to be updated often. And if you care about something, you want to know what's the latest. If you care about Lady Gaga, you want to know. News headlines, audio and video, podcasting is all based on RSS feed. So you'll get some information, the full or summarized text or content with some data about what it is, and then you have an aggregator, a reader on your workstation or on your handheld device or whatever that you've selected. I want to get all the information that has to do with flu vaccines for infants and toddlers between the months of February, or, you know, the importance of doing, you know, how often does it happen between November and February and things like that, or any sort of issue. And you can just sort of pull these things. And then you have at your disposal one repository of all the content that matters to you. Now you are a part of Web 2.0. You've manipulated the content that you want to get. And you, as a provider, possibly can allow people to subscribe to the information that you have. Podcasting is an example of this. So if you've ever got a video off of a podcast of iTunes, that's RSS. Individuals subscribe to the content. So I'm a big fan of Will Shortz and the crossword puzzles in New York Times, and so he has a great podcast on puzzles. So I get this one, and it's a nice diversion. Whatever you're interested in, you can pull. Podcatchers like iTunes and Winamp are probably the most common. And they're intended for playback on a personal computer or portable device. So I have some things on my iPhone that I was able to watch and listen to on the plane over here. So again, you're providing users with features and functions at their disposal, when they want it, how they want it. But you can create these too. So they're shareable, searchable, and measurable, and not too difficult to make. And you can publish them on, I put down, you know, Singing Fish, Podcast Alley, Podcast Net. These are all three websites where you can publish your podcasts. It's just a matter of recording an MP3. It's really quite low budget. One of the nice things about podcasts is, like a blog, something that's updated on a regular basis, if you create a series of something and you create in the user's mind, this is going to come out every week, then you've got them. There's a hook. They're going to come back. It's syndicated. I want to hear more. With that in mind, though, know your resources. Can you provide that? So, is it worth it? It's an easy question to ask, probably a hard one to answer. I think some of the things to keep in mind are, is it audience appropriate? these activities. The cost is usually pretty low, but the human resources involved might be higher than you have immediately. However, it doesn't take a lot of time to pull some content and add it to a website. So there's a spectrum of things. And we've talked about a lot of stuff. We talked about how much is out there. But I hope it doesn't come across as overwhelming. Each of these tools is something that you can add to the mix that you already have. And whatever makes sense for you might be beneficial. Certainly, as we do with any communication effort, you want to have a plan in place. A lot of the time, I think things like this are somewhat reactive. Someone comes in and says, "Oh, put up a Twitter, put up a Facebook. I heard about this. We need to have this." That's great, and maybe there is an immediate need for something like the peanut butter recall. But if you have the time to be a bit more proactive, as with any communication effort, it's going to pay off in spades to really build in who it is that you want to reach. How are you going to reach them? What it is you're going to reach them with? How are you going to maintain it? How are you going to evaluate it? Basic questions that we ask ourselves all the time if we're talking about making a brochure. We need to think about the same types of things with this. And one way to help is search engine optimization. And this applies to websites as well as a lot of the other things we've talked about today. This is when you optimize your content for search engines and online news outlets to find you and find your content. An easy way to do this, and there are people that are paid only to do this, so this is something that can be very big, but it can also be very manageable, is identify keywords. We talked about tagging earlier. So think about the words that your target audience is going to search for. And you don't want to ascribe them arbitrarily. You also want to be providing the content that backs that up. But use a keyword tool to help you determine usage and related terms. So you can do something like Google Suggest. It will help you find the keywords that might be useful for your site or your YouTube videos or whatever it is that you're going to put up. And then integrate those words into your content. If it's text content, we're talking about title, subheadings, first paragraph, but also just into the tags. Again, when I say tags, it's those keywords you assign to the content, the videos, the photos that you're putting up. Other things you can do, probably a lot of you in the room work on similar things or have a lot in common. Linking to each other automatically makes your products, your sites, your content seem more trustworthy and more valid to search engines. Because if someone's linking to you, it seems like that's a good thing. It factors into the algorithm of how search engines deem who comes to the top. Another thing that you can do is you can, when you provide a link, when you suggest a link to someone who's going to link to you, you can create landing pages. So maybe it's your homepage, but maybe it's a subpage. Let's say, for example, with this the We Can program that I talked about that I've worked on for the National Heart, Lung, Blood Institute. It's a childhood obesity prevention campaign and has three health behaviors: nutrition, physical activity, screen time. If I'm going to partner with ADA, Dietetics Association, maybe I want to have them link to my nutrition content so that it's a little more direct and a little bit more so that the algorithm might be a little stronger as opposed to just the homepage where it could be a bit diffused. A side note is that also helps your users. Think about what that user might want to find when he or she comes from ADA to your site. Maybe it's more nutrition-based than in general. Add an RSS feed. All of these things are things you can do to help make your site or your content more findable. And probably if you're working on a team, there's someone who's asking you, how are you evaluating this? How are you measuring this? Is it worth the effort and time? And it's important to do this. Evaluating online and social media tools as a way to reach key audiences and influence attitudes and behaviors. Some of the things that you might look at, basic stats and trends. So when we talk about websites, it's how many hits, all of that stuff. When we talk about YouTube, it's the number of views and the number of comments, those kinds of things. Some other more abstract questions just to get you thinking about what you might want to think about. You know, what does social media how does it accelerate the diffusion of messaging or brand awareness? What role do ambassadors play or other social networks? How can this contribute to positive acceptance and interpretation of messages? So these are all things that I think of that could be useful to that decision, you know, should we go on to blog? Should we have a social networking profile? And you can start to have these things as some ideas for how you might think about measuring your success. These are some ways that you can monitor and track who's coming to your social networking websites. The first three. Google Analytics is a tool. Does anyone use Google Analytics right now on their websites? It's really, really user-friendly. If you have someone who's a little techie who sort of manages your website, he or she can probably add, it's a little script that you add to the end of each HTML page. And then I don't think I have a screenshot, no, of the interface of Google Analytics. It's really very user-friendly. A lot of information that you can use to present to whomever it is that you need to demonstrate the evaluation of what's happening. Online surveys are a great way to gather information. SurveyMonkey is a nice, easy way to do that if you've used SurveyMonkey. And then social bookmarking and tagging. These sites down below, Delicious, Simpy, Furl, these are also ways that you can see who's bookmarking and who's tagging your sites. So the payoff can be great. So we've talked a lot about how the cost is not that much. There's some human resource that's definitely required. I'm just checking my time. The effort can, maybe there's a learning curve. Maybe there's a lot of things that we've talked about, but you can gain a competitive edge potentially. You can reach key audiences, including youth and older generations. You can really go into the realm of influencer marketing and viral marketing. Probably each of you has been sent a video that was quite popular and probably was discussed on a news program. I mean, I'm thinking Obama girl. I mean, that's the first one that comes to mind. I mean, there's so many videos that are sort of virally circulated or images. Build a reputation as the go-to resource on the web. It's hard sometimes to step outside of the mass, but there's potential as well, especially I think in the health arena. And there's certainly strength in numbers. We can work together. You can coordinate your activities with each other. You can borrow content from each other. You can have reciprocal links, as we talked about. You can, if I have a blog and you have a blog, we can help each other out by commenting on that blog. It may feel a little insular, but it still gets the conversation going. Share the content that you have with other people and use social networking profiles to leverage your activities, like we talked about with the ambassadors. So here's a big slew of resources. I'll leave that up for a little while. These address a lot of things that we talked about today. Just here are the social networking sites that we talked about. I'm not up on the next steps for this. I've heard sort of going away. I don't know. Here, Google.com grants. If you're a nonprofit or an organization that doesn't have a lot of money, but you'd like to work with Google to get some of Google's advertising and marketing tactics available, you can apply for grants through Google. AdWords is the keyword ad campaigns, you know, when you go to a website or Google search and the ads that appear on the sides. Wikipedia. PledgeBank is a way to create a cause and have people donate to that cause. Blogger and WordPress are two very user-friendly and easy ways to start blogs. This is another one similar to this. Great health marketing information available. E-marketing as well. And then these resources, I just always feel like even though we're not talking about websites today, a lot of the work that I do is websites, and I always want to make a plug for user-friendly, accessible websites. And this is a phenomenal resource for that if you're at all involved in usability for your sites. Google.com Analytics, we talked about how you can monitor your sites. And again, if you're doing any work with the federal government, really being up on Section 508 compliance requirements for individuals with any disabilities, that kind of thing. If you have more questions about that, we can talk about that. But just, this is a great place to go to. The tenets that apply to good usability for accessibility for individuals also apply to just everyone. It's good practice. All right, I think we have about 15 minutes or 10 minutes for questions. We talked about a lot of stuff today, but if any of you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to listen to them.
I had a question. Thanks. Hi. For a nice presentation. I learned a lot. You mentioned several times the use of banner ads.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if banner ads could be directed towards specific websites, and if the people who hosted those websites had any control over the content of the banner ads that went on their website. I was kind of having this evil thought about like putting some really pro-vaccination ad on anti-vaccination websites. So I just wondered if that was even possible.
That's a really good question. And until you gave the example at the end, I was going to say, oh, no, I mean, all my experience so far has been we work with designers, they design the ad, we pitch the ad to a website, they place it, and nothing bad has happened. I haven't thought about the fact of sort of counter-marketing and sort of, you know, getting into a place that might be a little more taboo from their perception. I don't think I have an easy answer, other than that seems to me it would have very little integrity on the part of that organization. I guess we could flip it around and say, would you post their banner ad on your site? And the answer might be no. And since they're paying, I don't know, it's a tricky realm because there's a paid element to that. If a negotiation happened and you paid for it and then sent it to them, and if they did anything to that, I think that you probably have some recourse. But there may be a sticking point even getting them to place that ad. But I don't have any more information other than sort of hypothetical. But I haven't run into that myself. But again, like I said, I haven't tried to place ads that were opposite messages to the place where I was trying to place them. But it's very smart. What you can think about, though, and what sort of comes to mind now, is paid search ads. If you recall, sort of on the side of websites or Google, when you type in keywords and ads pop up on the side, you don't only have to put in words that, like if it's HIV vaccine clinical trial, if I know that there are individuals out there that don't think they're safe, I could find words that they might type in for something that they want to find, and my ad can pop up. So you could be very clever with the keywords that you associate with someone who is anti-vaccine, and your ads could come up. It's a little more control on your part to craft that. Other questions? I think I would always go back to who are your users, and what are they doing online? Because I think that's a very easy way to convey sort of just statistical evidence that this will probably pay off for us. So even if someone has burnout, if you say, well, our audience, we want to reach, you know, 20 to 25-year-old Hispanic males living in New Mexico, and if you learn something specific about that population, it'd be hard to say no to that effort. There is something that you sort of, as you were asking the question, that made me think of something else, though, the sort of the burnout that, there's a very, like, I think it's important to be very sensitive to the appropriateness of what you do in the social networking realm and blogs. We talked a little bit earlier about trying to convey the sense of open commentary, open dialogue. That's sort of a blog etiquette, I think. Social networking sites like Facebook and MySpace, and for those of you who have profiles, it's almost as if we're starting to get spam on those kinds of things. Groups get you to sign up for it, and then you're getting all these messages all the time. So I feel like there's also an appropriateness of how we reach out to people in social networking environments. So we're not bombarding them with our messages, because we have the ability now to, if they self-select in, we can give them a lot of information. But it's oftentimes, like, you know, the day that my mom asks me to be a friend on Facebook might be the day that I'm like, oh no, what's happening? You know, when all of your worlds start to collide in a social networking arena, you start to get the sense that, you know, because people probably think of that space first as a personal space, and then sort of maybe professional, maybe you have maybe some colleagues or friends, but not all. So the sort of the spheres of our own world taken into a social networking world start to, they really play out there. And so be very sensitive, I think, to the fact that this is someone's personal space. So I know that's not the question you asked, but the burnout made me think of that. You know, people are starting to experience a little bit of, you know, fatigue of all the things that are almost starting to become somewhat bombarding in social networking arenas. Any other questions? Well, let me, if there aren't any, this is my email and my phone number. As I mentioned, I work in Washington, D.C. And I'd be more than happy to answer any questions by email if anything comes up later. And I believe I have some closing notes, housekeeping announcements to read. I wonder if I should turn this off. Should I finish the recording first or not?
Escape.
Okay. So that's done, and I think this, oh, I'll say it. Okay, so my email address is svanhoran@aed.org. And my phone number is 202-884-8781. And my name is Shay Van Horn. Okay, so housekeeping announcements. Stop by the CE room in Lone Star Ballroom A3 to apply for continuing education credits or to request a certificate of attendance. Conference staff is available until 5:30 p.m. today and until 1 p.m. tomorrow to help you with your application. You can also apply for credit over the internet after the conference. Visit the CE room for more information. You're invited to join the conference planners for West Coast Swing tonight at 6 p.m. in the Dallas Ballroom A. Tomorrow morning at 7 a.m., you can start the day right by participating in Turbo Kickboxing. It's a fitness event. It's also in the Dallas Ballroom A. Please arrive 15 minutes early for both events. The next session will begin tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Please see pages 31 and 32 of your agenda book for information about offerings during tomorrow morning's session. Please don't forget to complete and submit your conference evaluation form. You'll find it behind the last lab in your agenda book, last tab. Also, please stop by the conference registration desk if you need to request a receipt for your registration fee. Registration receipts will also be available on the internet following the conference. Please note that a light continental breakfast will be available on the Lone Star level tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Thank you, and enjoy the rest of your conference.